You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. 0% financing for 84 months right now on the 2017 Chevrolet Silverado, plus up to 10 grand in price reductions. This may be the best deal on Silverados ever. Check it out, Lakewood Chev.
Pleased to be joined by Dan Favoli. He's an NBA writer for the Bleacher Report. Dan, yesterday, the crazy trade, of course, the Cavs and the Celtics. 24 hours later, have you properly processed what actually happened last night?
Yeah, I thought when it first happened, I was a little bit miffed by it, and I thought that maybe in time the trade would grow on me for the Celtics. It has not. I thought the Cavaliers did a fantastic job to get what they did for a player who asked for out. That Nets pick should still fall in the top five. You have Jay Crowder, who's on the best contract in the NBA. Ante Zizek's a great flyer, in my opinion. You have a first-round prospect there who might project as a stretch five, who can also rebound a little bit. And then Isaiah Thomas, if he's healthy, I know you have to worry about paying him next year and that he's older, but he's closer to a lateral move on offense to Kyrie Irving than people really want to admit. So they become very interesting if everyone's healthy. And if for some reason LeBron decides to come back, that, let's call it a top five prospect, is going to help them potentially in a trade to land someone who maximizes his window even further. And if I'm the Celtics, it's just bizarre to me that this is the trade they decided to go all in on then, one that could potentially, however unlikely it may seem, help the Cavaliers keep LeBron James or get better when Cleveland is their primary roadblock to get to the NBA Finals in the first place.
Does the relationship between Kevin Love and Isaiah Thomas, I didn't realize this until today, I was doing my prep work, they played AAU together and they remain very close. So could the potential chemistry in the locker room be better in Cleveland with Isaiah because he has that relationship with Kevin Love?
Maybe. That was some picture that's been floating around social media for the past 24, 36 hours, whatever it's been. It can never hurt. And from the reports that we heard, mostly from ESPN.com, which has done a great job covering this entire thing, was that Kyrie was just sort of this recluse persona where he didn't talk to teammates for stretches at a time, or he was very introvert and sullen. Isaiah Thomas is not like that. And Kevin Love seems like that at times in Cleveland, but that never has seemed like his personality off the court. So maybe they mesh a little bit better. And this isn't really to be discounted either, I don't think. Isaiah Thomas is closer in age to LeBron James than Kyrie Irving was. So maybe there won't be as much loss in translation between that kind of generational gap. And that's something I think that was underestimated when LeBron first went to Cleveland. When he went to Miami, he kind of joined forces with peers and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. And you go to a place like Cleveland that has Kyrie Irving, who's still, even now, he's young, he's 25. He's only going to, I guess, innately treat him like a little brother if you're LeBron James. So I think maybe having Isaiah Thomas there could even help whatever personality wrinkles existed between the point guard and LeBron James as well.
We're joined by Dan Favoli from the Bleacher Report going around the NBA. How impressed have you been at Danny Ainge? Like, he's been able to rebuild this Boston Celtic team on the fly and really hasn't even blinked. I think he's been an outstanding manager for the Boston Celtics.
I do think he's still done a relative good job, and I praised him for holding on to assets and some of those Jimmy Butler and Paul George negotiations because he wanted to see what happened with Gordon Hayward. And he put the Celtics in a position to straddle the line and to make a deal like this, where I think objectively they overpaid for Kyrie Irving and it still doesn't look terrible. Maybe they come out better. And what you've essentially done even more of is defer your payment on your star point guard, because Kyrie Irving, he's making more now, but he won't really command this huge salary that perhaps Isaiah Thomas will be looking for next summer until 2019. So that helps you remain a little bit more flexible for another year. You get to see how this group meshes. And if for some reason it doesn't work out, you still have all these trade assets, including that pick that'll come from the Lakers or the Kings in one of the next 2 years. So they're still in a very good position. I just thought that if they were going to go all in on a consolidation trade like this one, it probably should have been for Paul George or Jimmy Butler as opposed to someone like Kyrie Irving. And if you were going to get Irving, I think you needed to kind of draw the line at not including Jay Crowder in the deal.
These two teams meet on on opening night. They're also going to meet again later in February, I believe, when Boston retires Paul Pierce's number. I believe these two teams are going to meet in the Eastern Conference Final yet again. Do you recall a time, not even just in basketball, Dan, where two teams who are kind of rivals swapped superstar players?
No. It was just this is just on so many different levels it's so bizarre. Because, one, you just had a number one pick traded for the last pick in the draft. Yeah. And we know that's never happened before. And not only are these two teams rivals, but they just met in the Eastern Conference Finals. And the Cavaliers are the team that the Celtics are supposed to be chasing. And likewise, the Celtics are supposed to be the team that the Cavaliers are worried about. So to see them kind of do business, again, especially with that LeBron factor in there, yeah. Here the Celtics, the best thing that could happen is LeBron James leaving Cleveland, potentially going to the West next summer. And while this still might be a minor detail, you might have helped Cleveland give him a selling point to stay next summer. So just looking at it from all those different angles, it was just that was part of why it was just so surprising to see this deal go down.
What have you made of the offseason that LeBron James has had? He's almost made more noise by not saying anything at all. There are these rampant rumors about him going to L.A., and he hasn't said a thing about this. What have you made of the offseason for LeBron?
It's certainly been interesting. I think he's probably handled it properly by not responding to too much of the Kyrie Irving stuff. We do know that he had that cryptic tweet. I wouldn't put it past him to use this as some sort of motivation. And it's hard to find motivation when you've been to seven straight NBA finals. And now you have this player in Kyrie Irving who is an all-star, a younger all-star, and he, per all these reports, didn't necessarily want to play with you. He wanted to leave. And that's something that he can use as a chip on his shoulder. And now you're left with Kevin Love, who everyone thought was going to be the odd man out of that big three, the guy who didn't necessarily mesh enough with LeBron. So he has a lot on his shoulders now. And I think ESPN.com's Dave McMenamin even said this today, that he's come across as obsessed during his offseason workout. So LeBron is still in his prime, and we've always needed to appreciate and enjoy what he's still been able to show us on the court at this stage of his career. But it also wouldn't be surprising to see him kind of take it to another level and perhaps even make it his mission to try and get that fifth MVP award.
When these two teams meet, we're joined by Dan Favoli from the Bleacher Report, when Boston and Cleveland meet for the first time in the regular season, who's going to have the biggest chip on their shoulder, Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving, or LeBron James?
It's going to be Isaiah Thomas, I think, just because if he's not healthy, that'll be one thing. But if he can go and he can play in that first game, it's going to be him, because he walks around with a chip on his shoulder to begin with, from the things he said about his contract to knowing that he's 5'9" and people go there immediately when they're going to criticize his play. And now you add on the fact that this franchise that you, I don't think we need to say turned around, but you kind of embodied the grit and you served as this bellwether for both their emotional performance and the results that they saw on the court. To have them trade you in large part because they were concerned about your health and, of course, paying you beyond next season, that's going to resonate with him even more. So I'd be interested to see what he would do in that contest. If he's not healthy, I think it's LeBron by far, and it might be because he hasn't had a reason to have this kind of chip on his shoulder in quite some time. You know, maybe after he lost to Golden State in 2015, but even then, the Cavaliers had injuries. They had built-in excuses. Then they go on to win in 2016. Yes, there were some bumps since then with mostly the Kevin Love stuff and the David Griffin stuff. But you look at everything that's happened in the Cavs front office, coupled with Kyrie Irving wanting to leave and then ending up on the Cavaliers' foremost rival, I think he would be the guy that would come out with the most fire for that game.
Dan Favoli from the Bleacher Report joins us. You might not have the answer I'm looking for, Dan, but why are Boston fans burning Isaiah Thomas jerseys? Because by everything I read, everything I listen to, it seemed like, besides Tom Brady and David Ortiz, he was one of the most popular athletes in Boston over the last 5 years.
Yeah, I don't want to paint, obviously, all Boston fans with a brush, but that's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen, is these videos of his jersey being burned coming up. The guy played a game essentially a day after his sister died for that team. And again, I think they leaned on him a lot to help recruit Al Horford when they brought him in. I think they just leaned on him a lot to be the emotional bellwether for that team. There has been some stuff that came out since that says maybe some people were frustrated with him in the locker room. We don't know how true that is. Players clash heads all the time behind closed doors, but also it's a pastime of letting these leaks come out after a player leaves. But to see that when he was traded, burning jerseys is dumb overall, in my opinion, but to see that when he was traded, didn't sign with another team, didn't demand a trade, didn't ask to leave, that's just classless. And it's not all Boston fans, but certainly the small gaggle of people that are doing it, I honestly do not understand their logic in the slightest.
If you're a member of the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors, you've been there three straight years, you won 2 out of 3, how do you feel about this Cavs-Celtics trade? Or does it even matter to you?
No, if I'm the Warriors, it doesn't matter to me. I do think the Cavaliers are a little bit better set up to play with the Warriors now because you do have Jay Crowder, that nice switchy defender, and those lineups when you're going to have LeBron at the four with Crowder at the three, and they're essentially interchangeable at those two spots, those will be pretty scary. And if J.R. Smith is having a good year defensively again, maybe the Cavaliers are able to run out their own depth squad with LeBron at the five and Crowder at the four. So that might be something to take stock of later in the season, but the Warriors got better themselves over the offseason. You look at getting a guy like Nick Young, who fits perfectly into their offense for pennies on the dollar, while also getting to keep all their core players. So this doesn't register on the radar for them, if only because the gap was so wide between them and everyone else to begin with. I don't think Cleveland bridged it nearly enough to kind of make the Warriors sweat or take note of this at all.
Which team in the Eastern Conference has the best chance to upset either Boston or Cleveland? Is it the Raptors? Is it Washington? Or is it maybe even someone else?
I think I would still go with the Raptors. I think they're going to miss Patrick Patterson a whole lot. He's one of the most versatile defensive players in the league, and I know he had a rough postseason, but we also know now that he's been injured. So maybe once he's healthy, I think they'll really miss that type of guy in their front court. But they're a lot deeper than the Wizards still. Washington might have a little bit more star power at this point, depending on what you think about Otto Porter. We also do have to note how Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan haven't necessarily been great in the playoffs at every turn, but I think I just appreciate their depth and a lot of their individual play styles. Again, coming back to Kyle Lowry, CJ Miles is a great fit, and I do think that this is the year that we'll finally see some offensive reinvention from this team, maybe a little bit more ball movement, better spacing, more creative lineups, assuming they can get to that point with their current personnel. So I think I just trust the collection and the depth of talent they have more so than Washington.
We'll just close on this one. A story that's kind of gotten buried in the NBA over the last couple of days is that the NBA, they're investigating the Lakers for tampering. I'm in Edmonton, Dan. I think we're the furthest away from the NBA franchise we can get. And I think even I know Paul George wants to go to the Lakers. What'd you make of this whole, the NBA's investigating the Lakers for tampering with Jordan Hughes with the Pacers? George isn't even there anymore. Do you think they have a case?
I don't think they'll ultimately have this huge case. Maybe it's one of these situations where they just kind of want to bring light to how rampant tampering has become. It seems like right now that it essentially can't be enforced, and maybe this will help shed light or implement some rule changes down the line. But I don't think they have a case at this point, and especially if they're going to use maybe Magic Johnson's comments on Jimmy Kimmel as a crutch. I don't really see how they would be able to argue that. So it'll be interesting to see what, if anything, the NBA finds or delivers in this search. But this seems like something where maybe it sets a precedent or opens the NBA's eyes to tampering in general more in the future than it would have any immediate repercussions right now, especially because Paul George isn't even in Los Angeles yet. He's in Oklahoma City right now. So to kind of paint the Lakers as a scapegoat for that situation would just be bizarre to me. So I'm not necessarily sure what the Pacers' end goal here is, but I do strongly believe that they don't have much of a case.
Wouldn't the Clippers have more of a case with Chris Paul? How did the Rockets magically knew he wanted to play there? Like, tampering is just rampant throughout the NBA.
Right, because him and James Harden have of course talked before that deal. So that's a great point. This happens all the time. You go back to how that original big three in Miami was basically formed while they were playing in the Olympics together a few years prior. So it's just, it's impossible to enforce at this point. And even if you could, even if you became more stringent, how do you prove these conversations exist if they're not happening in public? So I don't know what you do in this situation. It just seems like something you live with. And I don't know if the Pacers are grasping at straws or, again, if they're just trying to bring light to tampering in general, but I cannot see anything even remotely significant coming out of this.
Dan, thanks for joining us in what's been an absolutely crazy NBA offseason. Enjoy a couple weeks of downtime, and training camp's just right around the corner. Thanks, Dan.
No problem. Thank you for having me as always. Take care.
Dan Favoli from the Bleacher Report.